Hi, I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. In just a second, I'll have the special that we promised on field blends. I love field blends. But before we get to that, and there's some 30 interviews in that special, I've gone back to last week's guest, Chris Turek from Unsworth in the Cowichan Valley. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Terry.
You and I had a conversation about Unsworth, and the other foot hadn't dropped yet. And it, and it dropped.
I knew nothing.
And it dropped on, I think, Tuesday. And that was the fact that Unsworth has been purchased. How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling a lot of things. Proud and exhilarated are at the top of the list.
I bet. It's the stature of the people who are buying. Can you just fill us in on Barbara Banky and Julia Jackson?
Well, from what I've read and what I've met and what I've seen firsthand, they are some of the most hardworking and honest and empowering people that that I have the privilege of now hopefully being around quite a bit. Their view on the wine industry couldn't match up more with the one that I've developed over the past 15 or so years of being lucky enough to be a part of it. Exhilarated and quite happy.
I have on the line Chris Turek from Unsworth Winery in the Cowichan Valley. Barbara Banky is the widow of Jess Jackson and is a force unto herself. And if you read any of the books about the Jackson family and how they came to be one of the pioneers and major players in Napa Sonoma, Barbara's right in the middle of that story. And her daughter, Julia Jackson, they're in Napa, Sonoma. In order to look for a winery to buy, they have to go through California, Oregon, Washington to get to British Columbia. Then they have to get to Vancouver Island, to the Cowichan Valley. What is it that caused them to find that piece of land and say, we want to buy this?
Well, I really hope that it is a shared vision. You know, you said it just now that they were visionaries and pioneers, and especially mountain fruit in Sonoma. And we are on the edge here. We are a young region. We're growing by leaps and bounds. And I think one thing that really helps a young wine region out is when you get investment and when you get the expertise that comes with comes with a big company and a quality driven company notice and investing.
It's true because someone as connected as they are with the resources that they have, they will invest time and money in bringing in experts who will check that soil again. They'll double check the cellar, the growing seasons, everything, and if they can make us better, you know there'll be other people behind them looking to invest as well. There'll be a lot of eyes on those two just to see what happens at Unsworth.
Yeah, I'm hoping we can just build off what we've established with the dedication in the vineyards and the attention to detail in the cellar. And I think having, like you said, another set of eyes and hopefully several sets of eyes who have seen many vintages and seen many growing seasons, being able to lend a perspective, I think that has to take us and the rest of the valley up to the next level.
Can you remember, help me with my history here, can you remember another California winery buying a winery in the Okanagan or Vancouver Island?
Well, certainly not the island. I don't think in the Okanagan that California specific. I know recently we've had, Olivier Zine Tumbrich working with Phantom Creek and, Alan Sutra with, Poplar Grove and Painted Rock and others. But California specific, it's kind of escaping me right now. Yeah. I don't think so.
And what's been the reaction? Has the phone been ringing? Have you the emails?
Absolutely. Yeah. The past 2 days have been, really busy, both order wise, which is kind of the daily part of the job. And we've been really flooded with overwhelmingly positive reactions from our friends in the industry, our friends from outside of the industry, wine club members. And it's been overwhelmingly positive in that people understand that this means that we can further build on what my dad and I and my family have created here. With the help of countless people along the way.
Right. I like the fact that the Turek family is involved for at least a couple of years here.
You know better to know my dad's going anywhere, right?
Yes. Yeah, I know him. Okay. Oh, thank you for this, Chris. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Terry. Thank you. I really appreciate your support.
Chris Turek is the sommelier and the marketing director and the family member running Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley, and a sponsor and supporter of Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth in the Cowichan Valley, because all of the wineries in the Cowichan, and actually across Canada, have been asked to close. This is what we're proposing to do. Free shipping on case orders, as per usual, and someone at the winery is available for drive-through pickups. It's a great idea. Just a heads up, the wine club shipment is in June, and the restaurant at Unsworth is open Thursday to Sunday for dine-in and take-out. And the new easygoing white blend Island Melody is now available at Save On Food and their wine locations. Please go to their website, unsworthvineyards.com. Hello, I'm Terry David Mulligan, and this is Tasting Room Radio. There are close to 30 interviews with 30 different winemakers all across British Columbia, and we're all talking about the same thing, field blends. If we can basically set the course of what a field blend is, then maybe this will start to make sense. Before we saw varietal bottlings, single varietals, modern cuvée blends, there were just basically simple field blends. This was the way wine was made for hundreds of years. Different grapes grown together in the same field or vineyard, then picked and fermented at the same time. For many, many years, grapes grew side by side in the vineyard. Back then, winemakers planted some of those grapes for ripeness, some for acidity, others for color, some for the nose. And actually, this is said a couple of times in the course of the hour. Field blends are distinct. They are old school, and they may be the truest form of showcasing what a vineyard gives us and honors tradition at the same time. Besides other places in the world, you can still find time-honored traditions of field blends in Alsace and Australia. If you go to the website, mulliganstew.ca, and find Tasting Room Radio, check out the guest list. I think there's 30 names there. Enjoy. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Road 13 on the Golden Mile. Believe it or not, if you go to the Road 13 website, they already have listed their events for 2020. The dinners with Backyard Farm, the bubbles and crepes, cheesy weekend, crab boil, the bubbles and barbecue, the harvest barbecue, and the days that the wienery truck shows up. It's all there. Make your plans at road13vineyards.com. I have Reese Pender and Curtis Colt sitting in the chairs here in the studio, which is underneath a tree. Will we become a field blend region at some point down the road? Do you think that's in our future?
No.
Because?
No, I don't think we're at a point where, you know, that's, we don't have the varieties that go well together, planted well together, that ripen at the same time together. And I think we're still trying to focus on finding the best grapes in the best place first, and then maybe that could come later on.
I'm trying to make a case for it.
I think that there's also something to be said. Right now, we seem to be kind of drilling in a little bit deeper, kind of zooming in on, you know, now we're getting to our sub-GIs and specifics and kind of authenticity and transparency of product. And, you know, we're finally being able to tell these stories of what makes certain lots unique little small vineyards and all of that. And so I think we're just starting to get people to get the stories behind them. And I think that might kind of muddle where we're at.
What I'll give you is clonal field blends.
Yes.
Massal selection of clones being harvested together.
Yeah.
That's definitely, people were trying to keep everything separate, and now, you know, some are being like, let's just plant a whole bunch of different clones, interesting material, pick it together and see, you know.
But except for a couple of wineries, a Sunday in August, they don't want to put field blend on the label.
No.
Apparently not a great marketing tool.
This doesn't sound great, does it?
Yeah, you know, I think it's especially like, with now that you're adding those sub-GIs, you know, and it may be a specific vineyard and whatever, you know, you can only put so much on the front of a label, and I think that they may confuse people.
What varieties would you see in a field blend, Terry?
Whatever's in the field.
Yeah.
Just whatever's in the damn field, just like the Portuguese
do. Truth in labeling. Yes, whatever's in the damn field.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, boys.
All right. Thanks, CDM.
Two wine authorities we can all count on. Reese Pender, and Curtis Colt. This is our Field Blend special. Here's two of the very best winemakers in all of Canadian wine on the Naramata Bench. Valeria Tate from her new two-house winery, and also the consulting winemaker at Gold Hill, and Her Highness Senka Tennant.
Can we talk about Field Blends for a second? I asked you this just last week, but Val, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm a real fan of that. I feel like the cuvée and blending from multiple picks in different vineyards, sometimes from the same vineyard. Like, for example, our Sauvignon Blanc is 9 to 11 picks, if I have a long enough season to pick from one block. But I think that having multiple picks gives you much more development of flavors and complexity without manipulating the wine. So I love it myself. It just allows you to have such a wide range of expression. And especially when I'm trying to do wines that are a bit more on the medium body, especially for reds, medium body, not so extracted. And so to try to get that, still get the ripeness, but still also get the freshness of the wine, it helps by having earlier picks.
It also gives us a real chance in exactly what Val said about different vineyards, different sites. That's when the palate comes into play, and you have, it's very important. It's a real blending, and it's almost, I mean, I'm not belittling the other, but it's almost, as a winemaker, it's more of that blending challenge at the end of tasting the grapes in these vineyards, and then trying to project as to which way you're going to go down the line with them and seeing how, because you start working them right from the beginning and you're working towards the blend to the end product, right?
So
it's an evolving, you think, oh my God, like this is really, you know, this is really neat. So it is truly, truly a blend. I refer to field blends, something that's in one vineyard and like our Fandango, Verdejo, Albarino, that's a field blend because it's basically almost planted to percentage-wise what's in the bottle. So Fandango is directly out of the bottle.
But the point that you make...
this is more of a cuvée. This is, to me, more of a, you know, kind of all over.
The point that you make is that the Spaniards don't put them together.
No, no, never have. Never have, as far as I know. But, and as I mentioned on the preview, it's some sort of a symbiotic relationship that they have.
Val Tate from Bench 1775 and Senka Tennant from Terra Vista on the Naramata Bench.
You're listening to Tasting Room Radio with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
J-O-U-E, Jou, Avril Creek Vineyard. Brent Rowland is the winemaker. Now, here's the thing. As much as I'm interested in the front of your label and what's in the bottle, I am really, really interested in the fact that you are one of the few wineries who make a field blend and say it on the back of the label or even on the front of the label, because most of them don't. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to figure out why they don't. Do we know what a field blend is? Does it scare us off?
Well, I think that's a pretty astute point because I didn't...
That's what I do.
I didn't really understand either. And for me, the field blend spirit is the clearest segue from the vineyard to the glass. So it's not about variety. It's not about preconceived notions about the variety. It's about the region itself. And more specifically to Avril Creek, this is going to be... The spirit will remain the same, but the blend will change, and I don't want to be locked into any percentage. I don't want people to get fixated on that. I want them to taste Vancouver Island in the glass. So,
describe a field blend to people.
Okay, a field blend traditionally is all the whites, all the varieties that are going into the blend are picked at the same time, fermented together, and bottled all the same. So there's
maybe not in the same field.
No, not necessarily the same field, but from the same estate. Now... they've kind of evolved that. New World winemakers have evolved that too.
Because in Old World, in Portuguese terms, that's 20, 30, 40 different varietals in one bottle.
Exactly. And they ripen at different times. And so the winemakers have taken that idea, that spirit in the modern day and evolved it and, you know, maybe picked them at different dates so that everything is right, the perfect ripeness when you pick it. Because to me, phenolic ripeness is fundamental.
So your white field blend is what?
Gruyère-Gewurz. Picked together, fermented separately, but exactly the same way. So the fruit came in, I foot stomped it in half-ton bins, left it overnight. I wanted to build some structure to the mid palate through skin contact. Pressed it the next day into older oak vessels. I wanted organoleptic influence from the vessel, but not oak flavor. So I don't believe any vessel's neutral, but for all intents and purposes, it's an older neutral oak vessel.
Are your feet neutral?
No, there's plenty of flavor in there.
There you go. It's the 2018 field blend from Jou. J-O-U-E from Avril Creek. It's a very natural-looking label. Field blend on the back, 50-50?
Yep. pretty much exactly, yeah.
But you blended that together, right?
Yeah.
You
went I was going to be just Gewurz. Yeah. And I wasn't even going to do a field blend white, to be honest. I gave the Gris the same treatment that I gave from this part of the vineyard that I gave to what is now our Sommenos Gris, our top Gris. And just through fermentation élevage, they not bad, they just evolved separately. And I didn't see them together anymore. So this, I saw it with the Gewurz. So I did some blends, some trials, and we came up with it.
J-O-U-E, Jou, Avril Creek Vineyard. Brent Rowland is the winemaker. Okay, Brent, tell me about the red field blend.
Okay, so the red was, the fruit came in. I put about 30 liters of active Pinot Gris juice into a tank. Put the red fruit in, whole bunch, 100% whole bunch. Sealed the tank, left it for 2 weeks, didn't even look at it. I wanted it to ferment, so not full carbonic maceration, but an element of that, interberry fermentation.
What's the percentage?
I
is
don't
it 50-50, 30-70?
No, it's things went in, and this is the original. This
how
was
many
the
different
original.
Varietals are in there?
There is Merlot, there's Pinot Gris, there's Marshall Foch, and there's Pinot Noir, so four.
It's like a spit bucket.
It is almost, but a very tasty spit bucket. So yeah, so this was fun. After 2.5 weeks, I pressed it off, and I was really happy with the perfume and the vibrancy, but I wanted more structure. So the Sommenos Pinot Noir from 2018 was incredibly structured. So I had to be very careful about extracting those tannins. So through cap management, I was very delicate. And then in the press cycle, I stopped it at about 1 bar, which for me is about 3/4 of the way through the press cycle, dumped the press, and there was still lots of elements left in this beautiful Pinot Noir fruit. I didn't want to waste it. So I took the Jus Red, put it on top of those Pinot Noir skins, left it for 3 or 4 days.
Ripasso.
And pressed it off again. And not only did it give me the structure and the texture as after, but it gave me another level of complexity to the fruit profile and the perfume.
J-O-U-E, Jou, Avril Creek Vineyard. Brent Rowland is the winemaker.
This is Tasting Room Radio with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
We're in Ladysmith on the beach with Mike Lorichlow from Emmerdere, Lauren Inglis from Enrico Winery, and Karen Elgusma from Tourism Cowichan. I want to ask you guys about, I'm doing a special on field blends. And a couple of things. One, A, are we making field blends, not like the Portuguese who do 20 and 30 in an entire field and crush them together and harvest together. But are we doing our version of field blends? And B, are you putting the name field blend on the label? If you're not, why aren't you?
That's a great question. Now you got the gears turning in my head. So field blend, I'm a strong proponent of field blend at Emmerdere. I don't know if I'm going to talk a lot about for the other wineries, what they do. I'm not 100% sure. But for me, when you take three, four different grape varieties and you co-ferment them together, something magic happens. Yeah. You don't taste the two different counterparts.
It's a crapshoot.
It's not a crapshoot.
But I mean, it can be.
No. It's a crapshoot if you're sourcing fruit from vineyard after vineyard after vineyard and field blending. If you're growing your own grapes and your own property, you understand the soil types, the makeup, how those grapes perform, it's not a crapshoot because wine is made in the vineyard. And when you have an understanding of how those things are going to cohesively come together during ferment, it works beautifully.
So now, what's your blend?
What's our blend? We've got several field blends. So we've got our blend of Sieger Riebe and Gewurztraminer, two aromatic German whites. Our rosé is our weird field blend. It's Sieger Riebe, Tempranillo, and Maréchal Foch. It is a lovely wine.
So good.
But you know what? Even we can nerd right out on field blends if you want to. A lot of Pinot Noir producers, as we talk a little bit in the Valley.
Clones.
There's so many different clones of Pinot. We've kind of figured out the clones that work really well in here. But almost every Pinot Noir producer will tell you that if you field blend your clones instead of fermenting separately, they meld together and make something beautifully complex that tells you a story of the land it came from.
Do you put field blend on your Pinot Noir?
The description on the back talks, no, not on my Pinot Noir, actually, but on other field blends, the description on the back talks about field blend. But no, you know what? I'm not trying to sell a wine because it's this, or because it's that, or because it's organic, or because it's a field blend. I'm trying to sell a wine because it's delicious.
My question, Mike, was because I get the impression that some winemakers, some wineries, think that it's slightly second line, demeaning it's that term, that we don't hold it in the esteem that, say, the Portuguese do.
They're wrong.
Congratulations, you've just made the field blend special. It's a doozy. Oh, it's a good one, Mike. Oh, boy. Okay.
I'm Terry David Mulligan, and this is our first ever field blend special on Tasting Room Radio. We've already talked to Reese Pender, Curtis Colt, Val Tate, Senka Tennant,
Brent Rowland from Joux and Avril Creek, and Mike Norichlow from Emmendaire in the Cowichan Valley. If you're just joining us, this is our first ever Field Blend special on Tasting Room Radio. Coming up, Stefan Arneson from Poplar Grove, Richard DeSilva from Misconduct and DeSilva Wines, Ann Sperling from Sperling Vineyards, from Stags Hollow, Larry Girellis, from Pantage, Paul Gardner, from Rust, Jeff Hundredmark, winemaker Kelsey Rufiange from Echo Bay, and from Sartori in Italy, Andrea Sartori. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth in the Cowichan Valley, because all of the wineries in the Cowichan, and actually across Canada, have been asked to close. This is what we're proposing to do. Free shipping on case orders, as per usual, and someone at the winery is available for drive-through pickups. It's a great idea. Just a heads up, the wine club shipment is in June, and the restaurant at Unsworth is open Thursday to Sunday for dine-in and takeout. And the new easygoing white blend Island Melody is now available at Save On Food in their wine locations. Please go to their website, unsworthvineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends in the Similkameen Valley, Orofino Vineyards, and Row 14 at Clippers Organic Acres. Okay, first things first, remember Clippers is with a K. Shop online with them. Just go to shopclippers.ca. And from John and Virginia Weber at Orofino, take a moment to check out the brand new Orofino website, orofinovineyards.com. The suites are still open for business. Here's the latest news from Orofino. This is such great news. They are open for tastings. And Row 14 at Clippers is back. They're open Wednesday to Sunday, noon to 8 p.m. You want to write them, info@row14.ca. And welcome back to Tasting Room Radio, Terry David Mulligan. You can find the guest list for this show. There are some 30 guests in this hour. You can find it at tastingroomradio.com or mulliganstew.ca, which is the home base for the shows that we do. By the way, still to come, Michael Schindler from A Sunday in August, one of the few wineries in British Columbia that actually puts Field Blend on the label. And Sperling will be here. David Gouge from C-Star, Ike Seaman, the wine director at the Wickenese Inn, Grant Biggs from Kitsch Wine, who make a Field Blend called Block Party, Joe Luckhurst, Road 13. But first, in this segment, we're going to talk to Jeff Hundredmark from Mount Bushery and Rust, Andrea Sartori from the Sartori Vineyards in Verona, Italy, Paul Gardner from Pantage, Larry Girellis from Stags Hollow, Ann Sperling, Reese Pender, Richard DeSilva from Misconduct and DeSilva Wines. And we start with the voice of Stefan Arneson, the winemaker at Poplar Grove.
A one-off. I'm doing a special on field blends.
Oh, yeah.
Define field blend. What does it mean to you?
For me, you pick it together. You throw it in the same vat, whether it's going into the press. Actually, an example of one of our field blends is the Monster White Knuckle quite often, where we'll have a whole bunch of different varietals that will come in together.
How many?
We've had up to six.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we throw them in the press together. You press them off, you ferment them. That's it. Everything's done all together.
Surprise.
Surprise. Yeah, it's fun. Yeah.
So did you put field blend on the bottle?
We didn't. No, okay. We didn't.
I
we could.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm asking these questions, because everybody has a different opinion, but that's what a field blend is.
That's what a field blend is, yeah. Pick together the Monster Cabs. There's another example. We pick a bunch of Cab Franc, Cab Sauv. Typically, they come in together, off into the same tank, fermented together, aged together. Yeah, all done right from day one.
Is that an old world kind of thing?
Yes. Most now with I think a lot of wineries now, you try to be more scientific with your picking, where you're picking each varietal as it's perfectly ripe. Now, I think in the past, though, yes, absolutely. Historically, wineries would have, based on tank space and pickers' availability, would have just picked certain blocks, whether they were, you know, they're taking the East Block today, whatever's in it.
You're listening to Tasting Room Radio with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
Richard DeSilva, the proprietor of DeSilva Wines. Rich, I'm doing a special on field blends. Tell me about the field blends at Misconduct.
So yeah, what we do is we go...
And what is a field blend, according to you?
So a field blend is going to be from all the different vineyards that make up our vineyard portfolio. We go through them, and how that wine comes about is that 20 months into the barrel aging program, we'll go through all of the barrels, and we'll actually blend those from the different components to create the big take. So and then the remaining barrels, we're looking for wines that have more intensity, structure for further aging. We'll put those aside. to eventually get released into the DeSilva wines. But the big take will then be barreled down and bottled. And
what's in the big take?
So the current release right now is Merlot, Cab Franc, Cab Syrah, Cab Sauve, Syrah, and Malbec in it.
Okay. Have you ever just crushed what was in one field, one vineyard, and yes. turned it into a field blend?
Not yet. Sorry, no, we haven't done that yet, and I think that'll be happening probably in the next year or so. In that sense, that you're talking about, we're talking about field blends. We're talking about basically blending the different vineyards.
Okay, but here's the deal. This all started when I ran across Portuguese winemakers coming through Vancouver, and the guy said to me, "That's a field blend." And I said, "What's in it?" He said, "There's 30, 40, maybe 50 different varietals in that one bottle."
There are two or three other varietals I didn't mention in the big take. There's Petit Verdot. We have some Alicante Bouchette in there. And we have some Touriga Nationale as well in it.
Okay, but here's what I want to know. Do you put field blend on the label?
We have not yet. That'll probably be the evolution of the big take in the next year or two.
Are we not ready for the words field blend on a bottle?
No, I think BC is. Absolutely. I think there's for us, we're very cautious. As you know, we've taken the very long road. It took us 10 years to come out with our premium wines. Yeah. That is the evolution. We're excited because we're doing a collaboration with a couple of fellows from Portugal on producing some traditional classic Portuguese blends. We have Touriga Nacional planted, Touriga Franca, Alicante Bouchette planted. So those classic field blends will be coming out. So stay tuned.
Okay. So he is Richard DeSilva, proprietor and vigneron from DeSilva Wines and Misconduct on the Naramata Bench.
You're listening to Tasting Room Radio.
Here's a voice you recognize. Rhys Pender, master of wine. We're going to talk to Rhys Pender twice in this field blend special. One, as a master of wine, which we've already done, but also as a co-partner in a wonderful little winery in the Similkameen called Little Farm. I'm doing a special on field blend. I'm fascinated by field blends. And also fascinated by the fact that winemakers actually make field blends but don't put it on the label. It's up for you to decide if it's a field blend. Define to me what a field blend is. I'm thinking of the Portuguese.
Yeah, field blend is just, you know, when you have different grapes in the vineyard and they just kind of pick them all together and make a wine. And we actually have a kind of a field blend of clones for our Riesling. So initially we planted, I think I did four clones of Riesling. Mm-hmm. And then the year we planted back in 2009, we had some winter damage. And so we had spotty, mixed grapes. When we had to go replant those, I just got a few different more clones and just kind of mixed them in. So now we have a field blend of, I think, about 7 or 8 clones in the Riesling, which is kind of fun. And we just make them all together.
So with a field blend, can you play with it and balance it out? Or is it what you get is what you get?
I mean, if you know exactly what grape is where, and you could pick separately at different times and play around with it. But a lot of them just kind of, you know, they pick it as is. And you know, because one of the big things with wine is grapes are important, but place is important too. And sometimes in some vineyards the place almost overpowers the clone or the grape. And you know, so yeah, if they ripen at a similar level, you can just harvest them all together. And
do you have any suggestions or ideas on why winemakers and labels don't put field blend on? Is it because we're afraid of that? That chases us away?
That's a good question. I'm not too sure, actually. Yeah, why not?
Field blend.
Maybe someone will start it. You might just give them the idea today.
Yeah. A Sunday in August, he actually 2 years ago had a wine called Field Blend.
Field Blend. Oh, yeah, cool. Yeah, nice.
He only had 2 grapes in.
Yeah.
Rhys Pender, master of wine.
Food, wine, and friends. It doesn't get any better. You're listening to Tasting Room Radio, a celebration of all three, with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
Top Drop, this is year one in Victoria, and we're talking with the co-founder of Stags Hollow, Larry Girellis. Your Meritage is a field blend?
It is. It's now a field blend from our Stags Hollow vineyard. We planted some Cabernet Franc about 5 years ago, and now we pick them all together and co-ferment them at harvest to create a field blend. So we're stuck with what we get.
But you don't put field blend on the label.
No, we don't.
Is it something that would chase us away, do you think?
No, not at all. I think it's the wine I'm discovering after so long in the wine world, things are changing very quickly. Things aren't staying the same, and there's so many unique things happening in the wine world, and all you have to do is come to Top Drop actually to see all the interesting things that are happening around the world in terms of natural wines, orange wines, crazy, wacky blends, you name it, everything's happening. So, and the way to make the wine is really changing. So, and you have the consumer now has that huge opportunity to taste so many different ways wine can be presented.
Top Drop, and we're talking with the co-founder of Stags Hollow, Larry Girolis.
You're listening to Tasting Room Radio.
He is Paul Gardner, and he, along with Julie Rennie, are Pentage Wines. So I'm doing a field blend special, so I asked this question.
Okay.
Do you think we should maybe take a run at field blends in the Okanagan, and B, do you want to put it on the label? Because some people have a problem with that.
Yeah, I've got no problem with that. I think that your customer base that we have now would trust that they would buying a great bottle of wine, and we wouldn't do it if it didn't work. So I think, you know, it's funny, people like the term.
Yeah,
they do.
I love the term.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden, I have some people wrinkle up their nose, go, "No, we wouldn't put that on our label."
Yeah. No, I think that's it. We've got to do stuff like that. It's fun.
He is Paul Gardner, Pentage Wines. I am having the time of my life talking to Andrea Sartori from Sartori di Verona, a tasting at Hawksworth in Vancouver. I was looking at this the blend for the which one had the most in it. I guess it was the Amarone del Policella. And I'm doing a special on field blends. Do you consider that wine to be a field blend?
It is a field blend because in the area we don't blend the wines, but the grapes are out in the vineyards, so we only they all ripe at the same time, so it's perfect for the farmers.
Harvested at the same time?
Harvested at the same time because that's one of the reasons why those varietals has been selected in the years, because they ripe at the same time. And they're more productive, and they have better quality results.
Are they crushed together?
They're crushed together, definitely.
Wow.
Yeah,
that is a field blend.
It is definitely a field blend.
Do you put field blend on the label?
No, we don't.
Now, why is that? Because I notice that very few do, and I kind of wonder if perhaps there's a connotation that it's less than stellar.
No, I think it's a positive. It would be a positive information. To be honest, I never thought about it, but I have to check it out. You know, DOC rules in Italy are very strict, so I have to check if that is legal. But if it's legal, I might think of it.
Jeff Hundredmark, the head winemaker of Pouring Mount Boucherie today. I'm doing a special on field blends.
Yes.
Tell what is a field blend to you? What's your definition?
Well, for instance, a field blend for me, we do a PTG with Russ. Hasn't been released yet, but it's a Gamay and Pinot Noir harvested at the same time, co-fermented, co-aged.
Together,
yeah.
Crushed together. Bottled together.
Exactly, yeah.
Is it 50-50, or could
you? This particular vintage is 50-50. Going to be more towards Pinot Noir strong. With about 30% Gamay in the next vintage.
Tell them the title again of that bottle.
That's a PTG, Passe du Grain.
Okay.
Yeah.
And from Mont Boucherie.
That one actually is going to be from Rust.
Is it Rust?
That one's going to be Rust, yeah.
Is that Rust's role to do some of those?
Rust is really meant to do, not experimental, but really interesting small lots. Things that we can have a little bit of fun with. Boucherie is much more staid. It's a known brand. Rust is my playground, kind of.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Are you obliged to put field blend on the bottle? Because many don't.
No, I don't believe so. No, I think it's actually a really important thing to put out there.
That's my point.
Yeah. I really think it's important to market that because it's the way wine should be made. It really is. I think it's the way wine should be made. It should be brought in together, treated the same way together, and I don't know, I just think it's perfect.
Yes, it's perfect, Jeff, and so are you. Jeff Hundredmark from Mont Boucherie and Rust Wines. Still to come, Michael Schindler from Sunday in August, a return visit to Ann Sperling, David Gouge from Sea Star, Ike Seaman, the wine director at the Wickenish Inn, Grant Biggs from Kitsch, who have a field blend called Block Party. Winemaker Kelsey Rufiange from Echo Bay. A final word from Senka Tennant, Joe Luckhurst from Road 13, and Galen Barnhart from Monty Creek. It's the Field Blend Special on Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends in the Similkameen Valley, Orofino Vineyards, and Road 14 at Clippers Organic Acres. Okay, first things first, remember Clippers is with a K.
Shop online with them. Just go to shopclippers.ca. And from John and Virginia Weber at Orofino, take a moment to check out the brand new Orofino website, orofinovineyards.com. The suites are still open for business. Here's the latest news from Orofino. This is such great news. They are open for tastings. And Row 14 at Clippers is back. They're open Wednesday to Sunday, noon to 8 p.m. You want to write them, info@row14.ca. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch, who are now officially open. They offer two new releases from Crown and Thieves, The Winemaker's Wench, which is a crisp, aromatic summer slugger, and also an unfiltered rosé titled Pinky Blinder. You can find these wines and The Hatch at Black Swift, 2345 Boucherie Road, Kelowna, and hatchwines.com.
He is Michael Schindler, and he is pouring a Sunday in August. You want to know about this one. My friends at Scout Magazine got a quote from you. We wanted the brand to represent a feeling.
Yeah, exactly. One of my friends said originally when we were kind of talking about it, she said, you're trying to bottle a feeling. And I said, yeah, of course. So we want the imagery to match how the wines taste and how they make you feel.
Diving, rowing, one of my favorites because I have a rowboat, and my fave, field blend. Did I just imagine that you put the words field blend in the middle of the label?
Yeah, we had a field blend from our 2016 vintage that was a blend of Gewurztraminer and Riesling from the same vineyard. And I think part of it is, you know, I love the idea of a field and being out in nature in the summer. So we just kind of wanted to give it that sense that these grapes are obviously a product that come from a field and to kind of bring that sense of lightness to the,
but
to
I mean,
the product.
It's not like the Portuguese where they'll do 25, 30, 35.
No, it's only two grapes in that.
And do you still make it?
No, but maybe in the future.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, because I'm kind of doing a special on field blends.
Oh, cool.
What do you think? What would you, if you could, on paper, what would you put in a field to blend?
I would love to do like a red-white co-ferment kind of thing. So kind of like that Rayu style. So that could be kind of cool. There's so many aromatic grapes in the Okanagan and the Similkameen, so I think sometimes they lend themselves well to being blended with other grapes. So you get the Gewurztraminers and Rieslings kind of together, and it kind of complements the acid of the Riesling for the kind of low acid of the Gewurz. But to be honest, I'm really open to kind of whatever I can sort of get. So as far as like grapes go, we kind of assess what we have coming into harvest and what we're able to attain, and then we sort of figure out how we want to make the wines from there.
Are you a negociant still?
Because
you access from Oliver, Naramata, Caramias, the Similkameen, Sperling in East Kelowna. Still to this day? Are you going to grow your own at some point, do you think?
I would love to, It's just a bit of a barrier to entry with the land prices. And
he is Michael Schindler, and he is pouring a Sunday in August. It's his passion. You want to know about this wine.
This is Tasting Room Radio.
I'm Terry David Mulligan, and I have found Ann Sperling under this
beautiful maple tree.
I'm about to wrap up my field blend, so I have two questions. Do you make a field blend?
Our Pinot Noir is definitely a field blend of clones, not of varieties, but of clones.
How many clones?
Three.
From your fields?
Only our vineyards. We have two elevations and three clones, so we've got, you know, diversity coming from the vineyard itself.
Do they all come off the fields at the same time?
Well, they come off in sequence. So the more favorable or more south-facing aspects are harvested earlier. And then as we work our way around the hillside and time passes, then we harvest. So I'm not sticking strictly with clones, but more just with ripeness and aspect.
So it's a field blend?
Yeah, totally.
Are you going to put field blend on the label?
Well, I'm thinking about it.
Because I ask that because some people take a step back and go, no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's one more thing to explain. And in my world, Pinot Noir is done that way. If you want to make serious Pinot and complex Pinot, then that's what you do.
I can't see how it would scare people off, but that's, I think, what they're thinking.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll scare people, but it's just, you know, it's one more thing. I mean, we are challenged with people understanding what estate bottled means. So why introduce one more thing?
Okay, fine. Yeah. All right. I don't know where the answers are. I'm trying. Yeah. Thank you, Ann.
Okay, cheers.
This is Tasting Room Radio with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
At the 17th Annual Tofino Food and Wine Festival with David Gouge from C-Star, Field Blends.
Field Blends?
Field Blends.
Okay, what tell
and
me?
Your reaction?
I don't know what that is.
Is about, well, it comes, I mean, for me, it comes from the Portuguese winemakers who have field blends where they plant everything in the same field.
Oh, okay, yeah.
They crush it, they gather it together, they crush it together, they bottle it together.
Yeah.
But that's 30 different varietals. We're not going to do that.
Not that many, but it is interesting how many people will do a blend just, it's crush pad decisions. You
but
bring things
here's
together.
Here's the thing, David, they don't put the name field blend on the bottle.
Yeah.
I think they think it's not so much demeaning as maybe a second run or something. Maybe it's our take on what the field blend is, which is why I'm asking these questions and doing the field blend special.
Yeah.
And everybody has a different opinion.
Yeah, well, like I said, I wasn't familiar with the term. It's interesting to describe it because in some ways that strikes me as almost being the perfect representation
it's
of
fantastic.
Terroir, right? You're bringing everything from your terroir into one vintage.
Yep.
So, yeah, maybe that's got potential.
David Gouge from C-Star.
Food, wine, and friends. It doesn't get any better. You're listening to Tasting Room Radio, a celebration of all three, with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
He is Ike Seaman, sommelier, director of food and beverage at the Wiccan Inn in the Point restaurant. We were talking about field blends. Do you have, first of all, how do you define field blend, you personally?
Well, I think field blend, you know, is just a variety of grapes that are grown in one plot of land that are harvested. They're grown together, harvested together, pressed together, and turned into a wine.
Which is kind of risky when you think about it.
Yeah, because not everything ripens at the exact same time. And not everything, doesn't ripen at the exact same time. And different fruit can react differently to different weather patterns. So you can end up, you know, maybe with a lot of underripe fruit, maybe a lot of overripe fruit.
So that is a field blending on a big scale, but some of these wines in here are 3 and 4 and 5. Like even some of the Pinots are 3 and 4 and 5 Pinots, different clones from different fields.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I guess you could call that field blending too, you know, and the thing that I mean, there's two sides of the concept, you know. There's the single vineyard, one wine, one type, and it really showcases what that little piece of dirt can produce. And then you can blend from other areas to add wines with more complexity or more fruit or whatever you're looking for out of the wine. Or you might find out of those different plots, you pick them separately, you press them and keep them separately. And as you're tasting them along, you might say, you know what, this one's so special, I want to leave it on its own. But I'm going to blend these three together because I think together they're better.
Good point. How many bottles in here?
About 3,500.
And how many bottles do you think have the words field blend on them?
I would say none.
Any thoughts on why? I think they think, I don't want to put words in people's mouth, but I think they think we, the consumer, will think that it's less than standard.
Yeah, and I agree with you. You know, I think that maybe the purchasing population has move to a point where they want to know exactly what they have, and they want to see, you know, well, what am I buying for this $20 or $30?
You can do that on a label, but you can also say it's a field blend.
You can, yeah. Field blend is fun, I think.
Ike Seaman, sommelier, director of food and beverage at the Wiccan Inn in the Point.
This is Tasting Room Radio with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
K-I-T-S-C-H, Kitsch. Kitsch Wines pouring here at Top Drop 2019 in Victoria. It's a big deal for Victoria and for the island simply because this is one of the great small gatherings of winemakers, growers, people all connected by one common instinct, and that is to not mess around with the wines, let the wines do the talking. So I have Grant Biggs, who's the winemaker at Kitsch.
Winery is located in East Kelowna. We're growing aromatic whites and Pinot Noir. So today we're pouring the entire portfolio, which consists of Block Party, which is a wine that comprises of all the grapes we grow on site.
Well, I got to ask you about that Block Party.
Yes.
Does Block Party qualify as a field blend?
That's exactly what it is. It's 60% Chardonnay, 25% Riesling, 15% Pinot Gris, and 5% Pinot Noir.
Now, do you grow it all in the same field slope?
and crushed together?
Yeah, so it is grown on our 13-acre property and then co-fermented together. Not crushed together. I'll take press fractions and separate them when I'm doing the single varietal wine. Collect them in a stainless steel tank as a collective group, and then ferment, bring down into neutral oak and demijohns and smaller vessels, and really play with different temperatures. And it's a wine that I just want to, you know, to see what that vineyard does as a collective whole, whereas all of our other wines are single site, single block wines.
I'm doing a special on field blends because I'm fascinated by them. I'm also fascinated by the fact that many wineries and winemakers don't put field blend on the label.
Yeah, I think the block party to us speaks to it being a field blend, all of our blocks together, having a bit of a party.
Well, tell me about the percentage mix again.
Yeah, 60 Chard, 25 Riesling, 15 of Pinot Gris, and 5 of Pinot Noir.
KITSCH, Kitsch Wines, pouring here at Top Drop. Grant Biggs, who's the winemaker. We're at the first ever Top Drop Victoria. Kelsey Rufiange, who's the proprietor and winemaker at Echo Bay. When you were at Lincoln, did you guys talk about field blends?
Yes, you did.
What did you understand a field blend to be?
So to me, a field blend is picking everything at one time.
That's off throwing of the it all same. Together.
Yes.
Okay.
And that was the initial idea of our planting. I don't see how that would ever work with our varietals. We have about a month difference between our first pick and our last. The Carmenere needs, obviously, way more time than our Merlot and Malbec, so, yeah. We and soon discovered that wouldn't
and
work.
And you're doing a Bordeaux blend as well. I mean,
exactly.
That's a delicate balance.
Yes, yes. It's all about balance, and it's all about trying to find the right ripeness for those, you know, those varietals that it's just on the cusp.
Kelsey Rufiange, who's the proprietor and winemaker at Echo Bay.
You're listening to Tasting Room Radio.
This is Vintage 2018. In Victoria, I'm Terry David Mulligan, Cinque Tenet, Terra Vista Vineyards. If you tell the audience about your two wines, then I can ask you about that vineyard.
The two wines in terms of Fandango and why they were chosen. When I tasted them in 2008, which was actually a decade ago, I didn't know that what Verdejo would bring to the Albarino in the mouth. But I think those two grapes have never been put together in a bottle. This is the first and only, as far as I know, blend of Albarino Verdejo. And I'm always wondering why the Spaniards have not played around with that sort of possibility.
Tradition, maybe?
Maybe tradition. Like I said, I've seen Sauv Blanc, Chard put together, again, for that mouth aspect of the Albarino. But I think, I don't know. I think, like I said, Verdejo is a light, medium, minus body grape. But I think when you put them together, there's something they play off of each other. There's some synergy, like I said, some symbiotic relationship that happens in the bottle that I don't really know how to explain. Because when I taste the Verdejo on its own, it certainly doesn't have the same impact as it does when it's put together. And you can see that when you taste the Albarino alone and then you taste the Fandango. It's quite evident to me that Fandango is a little bit more rounded. Albarino is a straight shooter. It's like, you know, really, really energy plus.
She is Cinque Tenet. We're at Vintage 2018 in Victoria talking about the 2018 Fandango, which is this glorious blend of Albarino and Verdejo. What do you think of field blends?
That is a field blend. That is truly a field blend. That's what I refer to. And I don't like to use the word because people don't really know sometimes what that means. But Fandango is a field blend of our vineyard, basically. So all the Verdejo always goes into Fandango. And then the Albarino gets portioned off between the straight Albarino bottling and the Fandango bottling. So, but, you know, when I look back in the vintages, the percentages are always plus or minus 5%, up or down. They don't vary very remarkably between vintages.
Cinque Tenet, Terra Vista is the name of the vineyard, but you really want to go find these wines that she and Bob have created. The 2018 Fandango, which is a gorgeous blend of Albarino and Verdejo,
and the 2018 Albarino by itself. Tasting Room Radio, Vintage 2018, Victoria. This is Tasting Room Radio with Joseph Luckhurst from Road 13 in the Golden Mile. Joe, I'm doing a special on field blends. Mm. What to you is a field blend?
I don't know if I've even heard that term.
Oh, okay. Field blend comes from, like, for example, when the Portuguese come through and they have a bottle, he says, that's a field blend. That's maybe 30, 40 different varieties. Ah. It's all grown in one field.
Yeah.
And they crush it together.
Be a fun concept to play with overall. I mean, one of the things about the South Okanagan and a lot of the older vineyards in the area is that a lot of them are real hodgepodge, just so many different varietals. So you could do a really interesting field blend up that way. It's not something we've ever looked at, but I think could be an opportunity for a really fun small spring release, tasting up at the winery, something.
Joseph Luckhurst from Road 13. I'm Terry David Mulligan, Tasting Room Radio, and we have come to Monte Creek Ranch. Gorgeous, just east of Kamloops. He is Galen Barnhart, the winemaker, of course, at the Monte Creek Ranch. I have a love for field blends, where in some cases varietals are grown together in a field, picked together, blended together, bottled together, and enjoyed together. Do you have such a thing here?
We do, actually. The Hands Up White has two varieties called Frontenac Blanc and Lacroissant, and they're grown side by side in the vineyard, and then they are picked and they are fermented in the same tanks. It's always interesting. You can have two lots of fruit that'll be picked around the same time, and they'll be from the same area, and you put them in two different tanks, and they'll look completely different. This is taking that to the next level. We could have some Lacroissant, and we could have some Frontenac Blanc, and then we could have this field blend, and all three tanks would be completely different.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch, who are now officially open. They offer two new releases, from Crown and Thieves, The Winemaker's Wench, which is a crisp, aromatic summer slugger, and also an unfiltered rosé titled Pinky Blinder. You can find these wines and The Hatch at Blackswift, 2345 Bouchery Road, Kelowna, and hatchwines.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends at Road 13 on the Golden Mile. Road 13 has designed a new menu for seated wine tastings and vineyard experiences that make it easy to dig right in. Seating is limited, reservations are required, and good times are guaranteed. Make your reservation and make a date with Road 13. And remember, every Tuesday is Dog Day at Road 13 from 11 to 4. Gourmet hot dogs paired with award-winning wines. You can find them at road13vineyards.com. Welcome back to Tasting Room Radio. You can discover the details for this show at mulliganstew.ca. We proudly present the final segment of our Field Blend special. But I'm going to carry on asking this question over the next year of the winemakers and owners that I run across, and then we'll put a second one together and see if any of the attitudes have changed, and maybe even your attitude has changed about whether you want to see Field Blend or you want to try a Field Blend. I'm just fascinated by it. I thought you might be. Kathy Malone from Hillside is there as well. And then we pair up Gustav Ollander from Foxtrot and Lindsay O'Rourke from Tightrope. And then another great pair, Garen Elms from Lake Breeze and Jeff Martin from LaFrenz. And we finish off with the warm and lovely Bob Ferguson from Kettle Valley. And the last voice you'll hear on this special will be Gordon Fitzpatrick from Fitzpatrick Family Wines. We start with Kathy Malone, the wonderful winemaker from Hillside on the Naramata Bench. Do you have anything that qualifies as a field blend?
I don't in this vintage. I have done our Merlot Cabernet Franc that were picked and fermented together. It's tough because you want to pick each variety at its optimum ripeness. And so because varieties are different, they're not generally optimally ripe at exactly the same time.
The comments of Kathy Malone, the winemaker at Hillside. And now we head for Lindsay O'Rourke, a Tightrope, and Gustav Ollander from Foxtrot. Are either one of you interested in a field blend?
That Pinot right there is a field blend. It's a blend of multiple clones and rootstocks, and they all get picked together, fermented together, and that's how the wine is made. So.
Does it make it tougher?
No. Easier, probably.
Gustav?
I would agree there. So our estate as well. So, I mean, so this year, this last vintage, we actually fermented the entire vineyard in one vat. So for the first time, and it was the easiest ferment I've ever had. So yeah.
And what was the wine that came out of it?
It was all our estate Pinot Noir. So yeah, and that's sort of why we're wanting. Moving forward, we'll keep doing that. So I've just ordered some more tanks to be able to do more of that with our other...
Thank you. Garen Ems from Lake Breeze and Jeff Martin from LaFrenz. Tell me about Spice Jar.
Spice Jar is a super aromatic blend of as many aromatic varieties as we could possibly squeeze into one bottle.
So how many?
Five, I believe.
Okay. And would that qualify then as a field blend? I'm doing a special on field blends. I just need to know.
I suppose so, yeah.
Five?
Yeah, I suppose so. Gewürztraminer, Ehrenfelser, Viognier, Schoenberger, Morio Muscat. So, yeah, that's five.
How long did it take to get the blend right?
Well, we've been making the wine for about 4 years now. So, in the beginning, it took a little bit, but the whole idea is that it's built around Gewürztraminer. So, we always start with Gewürztraminer and then add the bits and pieces to that. So, it doesn't take that long anymore.
I'm trying to do a special on field blends, which is why I was asking. Do you have something that qualifies as a field blend?
Well, my interpretation of a field blend is when you have a paddock and it's got multiple varieties within a row or multiple rows that are one variety and you pick it all at once. We typically don't do that. The only thing that we would call, well, we do an ensemble, which is a Sauvignon Blanc Semillon. We do a Vivant, which is a Viognier Chardonnay or Viognier Roussan Chardonnay. We also have a Muscat, which is a blend, or Alexandria, which is a blend of white Muscat and Schoenberger. So we don't do what I would call a field blend per se. We treat them all differently and then blend prior to bottling. And I think finishing a wine is probably 40% of the... 40% of the total process, being able to push and pull and fine-tune a blend in the winery as opposed to doing it in the vineyard.
I think different people have different concepts and ideas of what a field blend actually is.
Well, I keep changing mine. I can't assume that I know what a field blend is. Actually, if it's not on the bottle, how am I going to know? I mean...
A lot of old world vineyards, they have multiple varieties. They interplant with a different clone or variety, and then yes, you could have a field blend because they pick the whole block, but they don't even know what half these varieties are.
For example, the Merlot from our own property that we use for our higher end McIntyre wine, it was intentionally planted with around 10% Cab Franc, and that is all picked at the same time and vinified at the same time. So that technically would be a field blend.
Historically, Cabernet Franc in planting material has been mistaken for Merlot and vice versa. So Merlot wasn't always Merlot, right?
And people didn't even know it, really.
We did.
The charming Garen Elms, a winemaker at Lake Breeze, and Jeff Martin, co-owner and senior winemaker at LaFrenz. Even if you've joined us late, I guess you can figure out that we're talking about field blends. And what it is, and who's making it, and why they don't tell us that it's a field blend. Now, Laughingstock Vineyards, the winemaker, Nikki Calloway, and from Red Rooster Winery, Riley Hollenbach. By the way, I want to ask you about field blends. I'm doing a special on field blends, and obviously my conception of what a field blend is came from the Portuguese, 30, 40, 50 freaking different varietals in one bottle. Are you doing any field blends?
I would like to. That would be one of my future projects, especially with Pinot Noir. I know that there is quite a lot of properties in the Okanagan that are now playing around with field blends. I know Martin's Lane is and Tantalus is. I believe Quail's Gate is as well, and their new site in East Kelowna. It's more renowned, I think, with clonal selection with Pinot Noir that I hear a lot about field blends. For example, in Bordeaux, they don't plant Merlot, Cabernet, Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc just like that. You know, I think it's too much of a varietal difference with ripening. So I think you'd have to be very site-specific and very specific in as to what your goal is at the end of a field blend. But it's funny. It's funky.
Riley?
We always kind of do experiments every year. So we've been doing, you know, maybe like a two-ton complete. So more of a Bordeaux field blend. So third Cab Franc, third Cab Sauv, third Merlot. And, you know, we kind of stick it away, maybe about 4 barrels worth, and put it in the back of the winery and see how it's coming along. So, you know, we're trying to get marketing to, you know, pay attention to this. And, you know, this could be something special because given enough barrel time, you know, cellar love, it could be something very special.
But you don't throw that out. Just send some my way. Thank you
for
that. Ladies and gentlemen, Tasting Room Radio welcomes Bob Ferguson, the co-owner and winemaker at Kettle Valley. Do you have anything that qualifies as a field blend, Bob?
Our Old Main Red is a field blend. Our Simsava is a field blend. They would be the two probably most pronounced field blends we do.
That wonderful bag of fun, Del Halliday from Elephant Island. Del?
Nah, doesn't really apply to us.
Thanks for that buffo closer. Gavin Miller, Upper Bench Winery.
I do, called Yard Wine. Mainly Merlot and Cabernet Franc. Actually, this year's Yard Wine, which is 2016, actually has just a little hint of Cabernet Sauvignon. I think maybe 13% as well.
And that's a work in progress?
All my wines are a work in progress.
Of course they are. Our Field Blend Special cautiously approaches the Fitzpatrick pouring table in Victoria and asks Gordon Fitzpatrick these questions. I came up to the Fitzpatrick family table, and Gordon Fitzpatrick's here, and I wanted to ask you a one-off question about field blends. What's your interpretation of a field blend?
Well, in our case, it would be our blended white, which we call our runabout white, but you know, typically what we've traditionally done with, if I've got the nomenclature right on field blends, is that we will do our free run for example, our Chardonnay. There'll be a cut off, and then we'll squeeze a little harder, and that hard press goes into what would be our field blend. But then we usually give it a little bit of backbone with something else as well. But primarily, it is doesn't sound very romantic, but the hard press of what we do.
All right, here's the deal. This came from a conversation I had with the Portuguese when they were touring through Vancouver.
Okay.
And they said, this is a field blend. I said, well, how many varietals are in there? He said, 30, 40, maybe 50. It's all from the same field. They plant them and crush them together.
Right.
So that's their field blend. So here's the thing. I'm noticing that everybody in the room has something that qualifies as a field blend.
Yeah.
And even when they do it and they say, yeah, it's a field blend, they don't put it on the label.
No. No, that's
true. It's like it's a bad word or something.
Well, no, I just don't think that, I mean, to be honest with you, I'd never heard that term till you came by my booth, Terry. But, you know, you're always digging up interesting tidbits.
I'm fascinated by it.
Yeah. So, but I guess ours would qualify, except, you know, we have our field blend. We've got 5 white grapes, and that's what goes into our runabout white. So.
What's in there?
So Chardonnay, Gewurztraminer, Pinot Blanc, Ehrenfelser, and Riesling in varying percentages. Ours is a little bit more heavily weighted to the Chardonnay and the Gewurztraminer.
Are they crushed together?
No. But
so it really is a blend?
Yeah. They're not crushed together, though. Okay. So,
if you had a field blend, would you put the name on the label?
I don't know. I'd have to talk to marketing.
Can I get points?
Well, we'd have to make mention somewhere along the line. So, anyway, yeah.
I thought if anybody could do this, anybody make this clear, it would be you.
I don't know about that, but you know, but it's interesting because my winemaker, Sarah, she's from Central Otago, New Zealand, and so when she came to the winery, she joined us for our first harvest at Fitzwine, and she just said, well, what is this? Why do we do this? Because they don't do it in Central Otago, right? They don't do blended whites. And
what did you tell her?
And I said, well, we do it here in the Okanagan. And so she wasn't very impressed at first, but I think she's getting the hang of it.
Thank you, Gordon.
Thanks, Terry.
Gordon Fitzpatrick, Fitzpatrick Family Wines, Summerland. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends at Road 13 on the Golden Mile. Road 13 has designed a new menu for seated wine tastings and vineyard experiences that make it easy to dig right in. Seating is limited, reservations are required, and good times are guaranteed. Make your reservation and make a date with Road 13. And remember, every Tuesday is Dog Day at Road 13. From 11 to 4, gourmet hot dogs paired with award-winning wines. You can find them at road13vineyards.com.